Thank you for joining us on this hangout entitled From Humanitarian Aid to Academic Global Surgery, A Personal Journey. My name is Priyanka Naidu. I'm currently an Operation Smile Global Surgery Fellow, and I'm delighted to be introducing our highly accomplished speaker for this hangout, Prof. Catherine Chu, a colorectal surgeon trained at UCSF and Vice President of NSF Southern Africa, now the Director of the Center for Global Surgery at Stellenbosch University in South Africa. Welcome, Prof. Chu. I'd like to start off by asking you to tell us a little more about yourself.
Sure. Thanks a lot for the invitation to be in this hangout. So as Priyanka introduced, my name is Catherine Chu. I was born in the United States, and I trained there to become a doctor. I went to Stanford University as an undergraduate, and I graduated from UCSF Medical School. I also went to UCSF for my general surgery residency, and I did a colorectal fellowship at the Leahy Clinic in Massachusetts. From there, I spent some time at Johns Hopkins University on faculty, but I left the U.S. after that, and my practice has been confined to working in Africa mostly. I worked for Doctors Without Borders, first as a surgeon and an epidemiologist, and then I spent 2 years working for Harvard Medical School in Rwanda, seconded to the University of Rwanda, working on a program to train their surgical residents. And I've now been back in South Africa for 8 years, working both in the public sector and now finally running the Center for Global Surgery at Stellenbosch University.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's quite a CV you have. So can I ask, how did you become interested in the field of global surgery? And could you speak a little more to how you view the field of academic global surgery?
Sure. I mean, I think just to put into perspective, you know, the field of global surgery, academic global surgery, really only started in 2015. And I graduated from medical school in 1999. So I was involved in the surgical field in medicine before there was such a thing as global health even. And I was first interested in, I think, what is now global health, but at the time, practicing medicine in countries less resourced than the U.S. And initially, I thought perhaps I should become an infectious disease doctor because I thought that might be the best way to participate in healthcare in lower and middle income countries. And so I, during medical school, spent about a year and a half in Kenya and Lesotho, two African countries, working in rural mission hospitals. And there I quickly realized it was a time that HIV was starting to hit the continent, and there was no antiretrovirals. And so I realized pretty quickly that the medical doctors were not able to do very much for patients who were all dying. But the surgeons, with very little other than a scalpel, some suture in their hands and anesthesia, were able to cure a lot of patients of surgical diseases. And so my experience at the time was that surgery was actually quite useful. And what I was going to do with that in my own career at the time, I was a little bit unsure of. So I thought, well, my options might be to become a missionary surgeon, or my option might be to become a surgeon working in humanitarian aid. And so over time, I sort of explored all those different fields. As, you know, the 2000s sort of came and went, it sort of became more clear, especially with the advent of diseases that were transnational, such as HIV, that there was a field called global health, which meant improving healthcare for all or trying to achieve universal health coverage. And then out of that came the academic field of global surgery, which for me, at least, really means improving access to surgical care for all people. And I was very excited when that field sort of became legitimized by the academic world, because it was something for me that I've been striving to work towards my whole life, but it didn't really have a name. And so once that sort of became a field, I realized that that was really the field I wanted to be in.
That's fantastic. So you've mentioned quite a few of your experiences that really shaped your career in global surgery, but did you have a mentor who encouraged you specifically toward pursuing a career in global surgery?
Not specifically. I did have mentors along the way who really encouraged me, for example, in my interest in surgery, as well as working outside the U.S. in low and middle income countries. Diana Farmer, who's now the chair of surgery at UC Davis, is specifically one of those mentors. She had worked abroad in Singapore during her early career days. And in fact, now she's quite involved in global surgery, specifically in pediatric surgery. But she really encouraged me just to think outside the box. You know, surgery in the U.S. at least 15, 20 years ago is quite a traditional field, which the traditional pathway was basic science research, and the concept of the surgeon scientist. But really the surgeon and the public health specialist really wasn't a career path. And so specifically somebody in global surgery, no, but definitely mentors that sort of pushed me in the right direction to do what I wanted to do. I, you know, on her encouragement to pursue something more in public health, applied for a Fulbright scholarship, which I received to go to the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine to get a degree, which was then called Public Health in Developing Countries. And I think that really helped prepare me a lot more for working overseas in a more formalized way. Once I started working for Doctors Without Borders, I did have sort of a research mentor, Nathan Ford, who now works for the WHO in HIV, in terms of looking at humanitarian delivery and surgical care in fragile countries and difficult settings in a more academic way.
That's great. And as you mentioned, global surgery as an academic field has actually only quite recently come into the spotlight. And so as this landscape of global surgery is changing, what advice do you have for surgical residents in the U.S. who are interested in a career in global surgery?
Well, I think the first thing would be to really try to take up the opportunity to spend time outside of the U.S. So I think that, you know, there's the interest in the academic field of global surgery, but I think a lot of people who say they're interested may not actually know what it's like to work in a different setting, and more importantly, see what health care is like in the surgical delivery. So I think that would be quite important. And if there is the opportunity to work for a longer period of time than just a few weeks, I think that that would be really invaluable. For certain nowadays, speaking about the U.S., there are general surgery training programs, residencies that have a global health or global surgery track built in, universities and programs which are twinned with institutions in Africa, Asia, Latin America, South America. And I think that that makes the path a lot easier than trying to have to forge your own path. And then I think specifically within the field of global surgery, define what you're interested in. And so you can sort of pick a research area early on that you can focus your research years in residency in, so that by the time you become an attending and you apply for your first job, you've already sort of carved out a space for yourself.
That's great advice. And how did you manage to balance both a clinical career in surgery along with an academic career in global surgery? Because I know there was a point where you were juggling both. And for residents who would like to do that and like to pursue both a clinical and an academic career, do you have any advice specifically on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think even if you want a clinical career and a research career, even if you're not doing global health, global surgery, it's still always a fine line and a delicate balance, because I think as surgeons, we have a craft, and it's something that you actually need to practice. You need to learn the techniques, and there's no kind of substitute for that. But at the same time, even if one was doing basic science or translational research back in the U.S., you still need to spend time doing that. So it is a balance. I think that, in my case, global surgery is sort of practicing the art of surgery in settings outside of the U.S. or outside of high resource settings. And I was doing that in a time when it really wasn't the academic field of global surgery. And so I didn't really do it all at the same time. I kind of, spent some time in my early years after fellowship. I, worked as a missionary surgeon in Zambia. And then I did spend some time at Hopkins. But after that, I really went overseas in my years with Doctors Without Borders. I did surgical missions in Africa, spent some time in Haiti. And then, I spent quite a number of years just working in the clinical setting in South Africa in the government sector, working in Rwanda. And so I think for me, I could see firsthand what was happening in the health system. And all of my subsequent research was based around surgical delivery, what worked, what didn't work, who was getting access, who wasn't getting access, what were the barriers to care in those systems. And so I think maybe my career is slightly atypical in the sense that I live in Africa, currently live in South Africa, which is sort of different than working in the U.S. at a university and then trying to have a research career in academic global surgery. But I guess my advice would be still, if it's possible, to, at least in the early years, to legitimize oneself, would be to spend a significant time abroad if your personal situation allowed that.
Great, thank you for that. And as global surgery develops, and it is really a global discussion and relevant in each one of our countries, what do you think are some of the highlights? You've mentioned quite a few of the experiences that you've had in Africa and how they really have shaped your career path. Could you share one or two of your absolute highlights of these experiences and potentially what convinced you to continue your work in Africa?
Well, I think for me, the real sustainable impact that global surgery can make is to improve health systems in low and middle income countries and transition away from kind of the missionary style of help, which also NGOs do as well, where we come in and do peer surgical delivery, meaning deliver the actual surgical care as a replacement or a substitute for the fact that there isn't that capacity locally. I think that for me now, the most exciting thing is now trying to be part of changing the system, which, to be honest, is a lot harder in sort of the more the long game than just coming in, doing a bunch of cases, and then going out and feeling good that you've helped 20 people or 100 people. So specifically for me, it's trying to build capacity within a health system. And I think that that is a collaboration and a relationship between high-income and low- and middle-income countries that must be carefully negotiated, because there are power imbalances there. There is the trap of potentially falling into being kind of seen as research colonialists or training colonialists. And I think that the true global health and global surgery is not feeling like I know more than you, therefore I'm coming in as the expert, but, we can learn from each other. And I think this current COVID-19 pandemic really shows that, because, the pandemic has hit the high-income countries, I would argue, harder than it has in the low- and middle-income countries for now. And so it's not so much that, disease affects the poor more than it affects the rich. I think in this case, we're all in it together. And I think that's what global surgery really is about.
And you've really managed to epitomize the going from a mission-based model to more a center-based model, just hearing you speak about how the two different models work in different ways to help support. How do you think that building capacity in country, how has that experience been compared to potentially your experience on NSF missions and working in a more mission-based model?
Yeah, I mean, I think the missionary hospitals and humanitarian organizations or NGOs like MSF or Doctors Without Borders, their primary objective is to deliver the care to the people on a short-term basis. So there's some sort of emergency or people are dying and they must get the care today, tomorrow, in the next week or so. And I think that trying to improve the health care system, you have the underlying belief that the health system can be improved, that there is enough infrastructure, enough human resources there that it can be improved. I think that, you know, the missionary style model or the humanitarian assistance model is that that system has collapsed and therefore a substitution is needed. And I think there is room for both depending on the setting. So, you know, South Africa is an upper middle income country just with a lot of disparities, but there is the belief, or I have the belief, that there are the building blocks, there are the people and resources in place to try to build capacity in a sustainable way so that the health system can help itself. And I think a good example of that outside the surgical field is treatment of persons with HIV. So Doctors Without Borders came to South Africa in the late 1990s, early 2000s, when a lot of the HIV epidemic was hitting, and there were, and the government did not have capacity to deliver antiretrovirals. They didn't have the capacity to produce medications. And MSF was one of the first groups to come in and provide antiretrovirals in South Africa, and, you know, on a larger scale anywhere in the world. But that, that ability to deliver those drugs has now been shifted to the government, and MSF has handed over that kind of treatment. And there was a lot of knowledge transfer along the way. There was a lot of working hand in hand for at least 10 or 15 years. And I see now in the field of surgery something similar. So, you know, there are knowledge gaps, there's resource gaps for sure of building a strong surgical system. But I think that is where collaborations with high income country academics as well as NGOs can be exploited or used in order to build local capacity. But I think now the shift is really on building local capacity as opposed to just bringing in people to do the work.
Thank you. And so as the conversation develops around global surgery in Africa, and as there've been a lot of initiatives that are African-led, and as the capacity building discussion develops, can you speak to some of the achievements and the progress that's been made in Africa, specifically around capacity building? And if possible, could you touch on the latest conference that you just held in Cape Town, the AfroSurge conference?
Sure. So, I mean, I think that, you know, again, to say that the goal is to build capacity in Africa specifically, would be around, you know, twofold. One, to build capacity to deliver the clinical care, but also to build capacity to conduct the research that would help improve the health system itself and to change policies. And finally, in the third thing would be to build capacity in the policymakers themselves so they have the recognition that, that surgical care is important and the ability to create policies around that. And so I think that, you know, in the last few years, that is changing. There is the more the recognition that surgical care is important. But in terms of the numbers of surgeons or surgical providers, I think that is still not enough. And so focus on training of different cadres of surgical providers is still needed. And then in terms of building research capacity, I think that is also coming slowly just because there isn't a surplus of clinicians to also do research. I think that's sort of been a luxury of high-income countries. Recently, we did hold a networking conference, which was called AfroSurge, and this was bringing together global surgery leaders from six Southern African countries, including Botswana, Namibia, Malawi, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. And we had various stakeholders who are involved in surgical care, from anesthesiologists, surgeons, obstetricians, social scientists, public health officials, come together to discuss the state of surgical delivery in Southern Africa and some of the challenges and the barriers to improving surgical care. And we tried to identify some priorities for research that could be worked on. And some of the things we came up with, you know, is like trying to find common and easy to use data collection systems, because it's difficult to measure, which it's difficult to change what you can't measure. We talked about improving training programs and how to share knowledge between countries. Specifically on that, for example, South Africa is an upper middle income country, and some of the other countries that I mentioned are lower income countries. And South Africa has more surgical residencies programs than some of the other countries around. And one of the questions is there a way to help train surgeons or potential surgeons from other countries around us here in South Africa? And so it would be building capacity in a south-south way or within Africa, as opposed to always relying on high-income funding and knowledge.
Fantastic. And in light of building capacity, I think that's really important that Southern Africa starts hosting its own discussions and hosting its own conferences to build capacity using the capacity we already have. And speaking to that, building capacity, congratulations on opening the first Center for Global Surgery in South Africa, the first official center. And this is at Stellenbosch University. It's quite an accomplishment. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the projects you're engaging with at your center?
Sure. So, yeah, we are the Center for Global Surgery, and our focus is research on trying to improve access to safe, timely emergency surgery and essential surgery for South Africans and Africans in particular. We, as I mentioned, are a research center, and we're housed in the Department of Global Health. We are working on various projects looking first at just measuring what is the current surgical capacity in South Africa, in particular at district-level hospitals. And so most of surgical care in South Africa is delivered at second and third-level hospitals, which are usually in large urban areas. And the district hospitals, which are smaller and usually located more in the rural areas, don't do very much surgery at the moment, and most patients who need surgical care are referred to the bigger hospitals. But for some patients, that can be prohibitively difficult due to lack of transport options or finances. And so we are trying to look first and foremost at surgical capacity at the district hospital level. We are looking both at what is the available infrastructure, as well as the level of training of the people working there. And I think we're doing all that to try and figure out ways that we can improve that, and how, for example, surgeons working at higher level hospitals can get involved in the training of doctors working at district hospitals. We're also trying to look at mapping barriers to particular health conditions like traumatic brain injury, within one system. We really want to focus our research not on one hospital at a time and report back what is that capacity, but an entire system at looking at various levels of hospital, of healthcare facilities, and trying to see where patients can seek their care. We're looking also at the factors that contribute to delays to patient care. So, for example, delays from being transferred if you have acute appendicitis, and whether that affects your health outcomes. And then finally, we are looking at mobile health technology. In South Africa, we use a mobile health app for referrals called Vula Mobile. And we're looking at, through their data, what referral patterns are like, and how we can improve care.
Incredible. And I know that you're able to take on all these research projects because you have quite a cohort of postgraduate students and anyone really who's looking to get involved with global surgery. or has some passion for global health. And I know that you have quite a few South African students at the moment, but can you speak to some of the opportunities available for US surgical residents to engage in these global surgery research projects with you?
Yes, thanks for bringing that up. Our Center of Global Surgery would love to engage with surgical residents and medical students that were interested in participating in research in South Africa. We offer short-term fellowships as well as longer-term ones. We have quite a lot of qualitative and quantitative studies going on that any research fellow could come and get involved in. We are located in the city of Cape Town, which is a beautiful city and has offers a lot in terms of natural beauty and tourist sites to see as well. And so, I think anybody that's interested would be most welcome.
Thank you so much. That's incredible. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity before we wrap up, if you have any last minute points that you want to share with us. I know it's really early in the morning in the US, so unfortunately, I know that none of you are able to be on the call to join us to share your questions, but I really am hoping that you'll be able to engage with questions when the discussion is posted on the ACS site. But Prof Chu, are there any final remarks that you have?
Sure. Well, first of all, if there are any further questions, if anyone listens to this webcast, I'm certainly happy to answer them by email. So I think if you share my email contact, I'm happy to have people contact me directly. But I guess also just to say that surgery is such an important field, particularly in Africa. It really does save lives. And I think all of you that are interested in global surgery, it's just wonderful. The more people that are able to participate in their research around what are the gaps to improving surgical delivery, I think the better. I think that the more sort of global health researchers that can be trained up, whether they're from South Africa, other parts of Africa, the U.S., Europe, I think the better, because this is still a very young field, and we really need more good people to be in it. We didn't really talk about funding streams, but, overall funding for global surgery, although it's improving, it's still really in its infancy. And I think the more people that get involved in the field, the more voice we'll have.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you for offering to publish your details so that residents can get in touch with you if they're looking to do a fellowship at the Center for Global Surgery. I know that you have tons of projects and would be more than willing to take any of the residents who are willing to work with you on these projects. So thank you. And Prof Chu, I'd just like to thank you so much for your time and sharing your experiences with us. You've had an incredible path and managed to find the point where the worlds of surgery, humanitarianism, and global health really do intersect, and managed to forge this path at a time when the field of global surgery didn't actually exist. So thank you for sharing those experiences with us. I know I've been very fortunate to have you as a mentor in global surgery, and so I'd really encourage any other residents who'd be interested in opportunities and fellowships in global surgery to take a look online at Prof Chu's details for any opportunities that the center has to offer. And I hope that you'll be able to engage further in this conversation. Thank you.
And thank you very much for your time and having me on. I just also to mention that we do have a website, and if perhaps those details can be shared on this webcast, that would be great too.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll do that.